Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Yes, that's right. Welcome back to Jay Flemma Sports Report on iHeartRadio. We are with the Golf News Net, and we're glad to have you back for the show. We got a big one for you. We're going to be talking more about LIV Golf. We'll be talking with some of the greatest minds in turf grass and in maintaining the golf courses and in building them. And we'll be talking a little bit about the chess imbroglio. For those of you that haven't heard, it's Armageddon in the chess world. So let's get right to it. We have our first guest is not only one of the great writers about the PGA Tour, but one of the nicest people you would ever want to meet and work with. So he wrote for the Caddy Network for a long time. He also wrote for PGA.com. Please welcome TJ O'Claire to the show. TJ, welcome to Jay Flemma Sports Report.
Thanks so much, Jay. It's a pleasure to join you.
Well, it's always great to have somebody who is so much of a tour insider in so many different ways. So give us the lowdown. What is the latest that is happening in, you know, this Shakespearean and magnitude drama between LIV and the PGA Tour?
Well, it sure has been something, huh, with all this golf news over the last several months. I personally think it was a situation that maybe early on the PGA Tour didn't maybe take quite as seriously as they should have. I think we've seen them kind of have that about face in recent weeks and coming up with all this extra money, all these huge purses to entice guys to stay put. But it is very interesting. I mean, even seeing the big players who have come out against it, like a guy like Rory McIlroy, who up until just a few days ago is now suddenly saying, we've got to find a way to work together, right? We got to sit down. We got to figure this out. And I'm in the same camp as Rory. I mean, if you're going to contest a golf tournament and say that you've got the best players in the world there and Dustin Johnson and Cam Smith aren't there, you don't have the best golfers in the world. So I do hope that they can come to some sort of, some sort of agreement. I don't know how it's going to work out, but I think at the end of the day, it's bad for golf fans if things remain as divided as they are right now.
Well, let's lay the landscape out for the golf fans. You did bring us up to date on some of the latest, but let's pick it up from the point where Cam Smith goes over to LIV and the PGA Tour season effectively ends, as we sort of start the new season, although we're staggering it in this coming year. So bring us up to date on both the changes the PGA Tour is going to see and the interplay, both in court and outside of court, between LIV and the PGA Tour.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, with the purses, the PGA Tour has decided to beef up some events, make them very high profile, have these huge $20 million purses that are competing with what LIV has now, which I think is $25 million purses. You'll have those elevated events, which will rotate. It's not going to be the same ones every single year outside of the World Golf Championships, the Invitationals and the Majors. But, I definitely think it was a brilliant move by the PGA Tour because on LIV, you know, you've got guys going and there have been very few who have admitted the reason why they went, which I think we all know is because of money. But, you know, I look at some guys and I personally don't think you can begrudge people who have made that choice. You don't have to like where the money's coming from. I think a lot of people can agree that, you know, people aren't comfortable with that. But I look at a guy like Pat Perez, who is 47 years old. He's given $10 million guaranteed to join LIV, which is money he's never going to make in the 3 years he's got left on the PGA Tour before he becomes eligible for the Champions Tour. And I think it's a no-brainer. I mean, and then you look at what he's done, and it's been pretty much next to nothing on LIV, yet he's racking up millions of dollars because of the team aspect. So, you know, again, I can't begrudge people who are taking care of their families. I mean, I look at Harold Varner. He just had his first child. He's a guy who doesn't come from much. He's given all this guaranteed money, and now generations of Varners are all set because of the decision that he made.
Is it a question of degree, though? I mean, we are talking about Mohammed bin Salman, who is, without question, one of the most unsavory figures on the world stage. Whether you want to talk about him sending a bot to Jeff Bezos's phone that basically lets his Secret Service download all the information and then leak out to the world that he had an affair, to claiming that he can murder his uncle with a ring that's poisoned from the Russians. That story took on a whole life of its own. To cutting up a journalist into little pieces and carrying him out of a embassy in several suitcases. The guy was there to pick up his marriage license. When do you become a Quisling? That's my question for these players.
Yeah, no, and I think it's a fair question. I think you said it all right there, Jay. I mean, I don't know. I guess that's just, a question those guys have to ask themselves. They have to ask themselves if they're, comfortable with taking the money and what comes along with it. So far, I definitely think,
What else comes along with it? For example, if the United States and Saudi Arabia somehow politically or worse come to cross purposes, whose side are they on?
Yeah, I guess that's bringing in a lot of different elements that I've my expertise is the golf stuff. I'm not trying to pull a a tour player. I'm not a politician, but no, I agree with you that if it came down to it, I mean, if we were in that circumstance, I'm sure guys wouldn't side with the Saudis, but again, we're not there yet. Hopefully we don't get there.
Well, when President Biden has to go and beg for oil and then they don't give it to him. But these are questions that I don't think these players deeply considered enough when they had the money dangling in front of them. We know that they did it for the money, but money is fleeting on occasion. Patrick Ewing took a lot of flack when he said we make a lot, but we spend a lot. But he was right about that. They overspent on things too quickly, too much. And then there's one other question that no one's been able to answer for me. What's the steroid and PED policy on the LIV tour?
Yeah, I am not even sure there is one. There's not one that I've read about. I don't know about you, but
Thus far, I have not gotten any answer from anybody. So what happens if, those players get a little bit cavalier and then all of a sudden one of them gets caught at, say, the US Open or, say, the Open Championship, which very well could happen. After all, Dustin Johnson got caught. Was it not a test at the US Open that caught DJ allegedly for something serious that got him suspended?
I don't recall. I recall the suspension. I don't recall if it was at the US Open precisely. It very well could have been, but I don't recall that.
I'm guessing it might have been Pinehurst in 2014.
Okay.
But now tell me, what are you hearing about what the players on LIV are saying to Greg Norman now that it seems as though their jump, isn't looking as lucrative or as genius a move as it might have originally appeared when all the money was being dangled in front of them? Are there rumblings of players that are unhappy at LIV?
There are none that I've heard, but I would also need you to clarify. Are you talking about what we've seen where players may have been fronted the money that they have to earn back with their winnings? Is that what we're talking about here? Where
No,
they may
that
not be
was
getting
not
paid
my.
during the tournament?
That's an interesting question, too. That's a very interesting question, too. But no, I was asking more along the lines. Are some guys, now that they're hearing that the lawsuits against the PGA Tour aren't going well, are they turning to Norman and saying, hey, this looked like a guaranteed thing, and now it's starting to look like we're shut out more than we anticipated?
Yeah, Jay, I think as far as that goes, I'm not sure if those questions are there just yet because again, like we said, the money above all was probably what made these guys make this decision. I'm sure their agents were involved, so maybe they weren't, the agents looking to count his cut and see what that's going to be and not so worried about all the particulars there. But for me, and I wonder if you would agree, I think the big headline is going to be what happens with Augusta National. Are they going to welcome these guys? Because again, it goes back to the short conversation we just had. if you're going to contest the tournament and say you've got the best in the world, and DJ, who is a Masters champion, isn't there, Cam Smith, who, you know, I think he was just runner-up this year. He won the Players, won the Open Championship. He's not there. Patrick Reed, I know everybody has whatever feelings they have about Reed, also a Masters champion. So I kind of think once Augusta finally comes out and tells us how they're going to handle things, whether that's, you know, December, January, February, just before the Masters, whatever, I kind of think the other majors are going to follow that lead. And again, you know, these guys could be in a predicament because you're going to have some who were only going to be able to get into those tournaments based on world ranking. If they're not getting world ranking points, how are they going to get there? Not everybody's got the exemption that Dustin's got or the exemption that Cam Smith is going to have in the majors, right? So I think we'll see what Augusta does, but I also think there's got to be some way where the world ranking situation's figured out. And it's not, to me, the answer is not 54 holes.
We're talking with TJ Auclair, one of the great minds and writers on the PGA Tour. And he spent many years writing for the Caddy Network and PGA.com. Well, you mentioned a predicament for some of the players. Here's another one. There's only 48 guys that play in each LIV tournament, but they keep adding players. So if only 48 guys compete, what happens to the bottom guys that sort of get pushed out? You know, what happens when they're full at 48, but then they pick off four new guys? Who gets kicked out? Mm-hmm. And what happens to them?
Yeah, I mean, and we've seen it already with some guys. I mean, I think in the case of many of them, whether it's a young amateur or, you know, a young guy who recently turned pro or within the last couple of years, you look at Andy Ogletree, who was a U.S. Open champion. He's had a very difficult time getting exemptions anywhere. So the first LIV event in London, he got invited to play. Monster payday, right? What last place is some astronomical number anyway. So for a guy like that who's trying to kickstart his career, can't find starts on the Korn Ferry Tour, can't find a start on the PGA Tour, he's going to go there probably with the realization that, hey, I'm really going there for the payday, because chances are if, you know, Tiger Woods or Rory McIlroy come in and they want a spot, I'm the first one to go. But you also have to kind of balance that. And to your point again, like Ogletree now, is he pretty much annexed himself from the PGA Tour ever, you know, because he went over there and played one event?
And what's the procedure to get back on in case you get kicked off?
So I don't even know what that is yet. Have they laid that out? I mean, right now they're calling it a suspension. I don't know what the length of the suspension is for Mickelson or DJ or whoever.
I'm sorry, I asked the wrong question. What I meant to ask is, the players on LIV that are relegated off, okay? Players sure. 45 through 48, who when four new guys come in, suddenly find themselves as 49 through 52. If they're not allowed to play in the LIV tournaments and any other tournaments, how do they earn their way back to play in the future LIV tournaments? Or are they one and done?
That's a great question. And I think there's so much gray area right now that we don't know. It's almost like, you know, with Norman, we've heard all these stories about how behind the scenes, he's telling the players, don't worry, we have it under control. You're independent contractors. You can play wherever you want, make a living for your family. You can do what you want. In court, we're finding out that may not exactly be the case the way that it's been laid out as of now. But I just think there are so many unanswered questions.
In court, we're finding out right now that
they're
taking it to woodshed.
Yeah. I mean, there's Pablo Larrazábal from Spain, who's a good buddy of Sergio Garcia's. He's in a little predicament right now because he played one event because he wanted to see what it was like and didn't think about the repercussions when it came to the European, or, you know, DP World Tour now. So he's trying to figure out exactly what it is that's going to impact his status there. And I don't know if it's just playing dumb or what. I don't know how you could go play the LIV event with as hot a topic as this has been in golf and think there will be no repercussions if you do play, right?
Now, here's another thought. Rumblings reach ears that one of the key pressure points for the LIV promoters has been the caddies. I hear that they're throwing all kinds of things at the caddies. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're hearing with regards to some of the perks the caddies are getting, and are they starting to push their guys towards LIV?
You know, To answer that last question first, I've spoken with several caddies, and being that the sensitive nature of that job, they're not going to push their guy to make a move. If the guy moves, I'm sure the caddy would financially would be very happy to do so. But I don't think anybody's out there pressuring their guys. As for caddies that are out there right now, I have a few buddies that are out there caddying right now. I have one, who had been a journeyman caddy, really, 20 years, not a single win on the PGA Tour. He, busts his butt every week. He's a guy who's floated around to a bunch of different players, and then it just so happens he gets a call from one of the guys on LIV who wins in their first week together. So all of a sudden, 10% of, the 4.5 million that that cat the player won, 450 grand's going to the caddy, which is a pretty sweet deal. So they love that. They love the travel aspect. All their expenses are covered through LIV. They get a hotel room that they don't have to worry about. They're eating decent food. They're getting treated like kings, right? One thing in particular that I saw on social media today, Kenny Harms, longtime caddy of Kevin Na, he's always really good about kind of giving you the inside look behind the scenes, takes his camera phone everywhere, but he was showing you the locker room that they have this week in Bangkok, and it's the player and caddy locker room, right? It's not like on the PGA Tour where the caddies, as Scott Van Pelt once called them, outside dogs, have to stand in the rain or whatever it is to wait for their player to come out of the locker room. They're actually part of the team on LIV, and I think that they love that aspect of it. For a long time, I can remember the camaraderie of the guys that played the European Tour who would come on the PGA Tour, and they hated it because they'd be on the driving range and they would just say, "What do you guys do at night? We like to hang out, go have a couple drinks, have a great dinner." The PGA Tour guys are like, "We work out, we eat a quick meal, go to bed, get to bed early, get up early and practice." And that's not their thing. So I think from a caddy perspective, they love the treatment that they're getting. They like that they feel like a valued member of the team. I think they've always been underappreciated because they are half of the team out there. And I think right now the guys that are out there are kind of enjoying, the bright lights, if you want to say. I mean, I think we all saw the private jet that LIV had for the players and caddies coming back from Europe, and it looked like, one of the best clubs in Vegas on the inside of this airplane. So they definitely like the treatment that they're getting now.
Let's move a little bit back to the PGA Tour. So, who do you think are going to be some of the young rising stars that may not have been on people's radar this year, but that you're looking at next year to make a big impact?
Wow, that's a good question because there are just so many young studs right now. Sahith Theegala has been fantastic this year. Incredible personality. I have, and Jay, I think you and I have spoken about it many times, but my dearest friend, Michael Sims from Bermuda, who I went to college with at the University of Rhode Island, he's a pro golfer, has been for years, and he never made it to the tour, but he qualifies pretty much every year for the Bermuda championship that they have on tour now. He played with Sahith last year and told me, he said, "This guy is just an absolute stud and just, so great with the crowd." So he started to come out a little bit this year. I mean, he made it to the tour championship, which was fantastic, but it's just amazing to me, like a guy like Scottie Scheffler. I'm really involved with the caddy stuff. I look at, he had a great caddy in Scott McGinnis the last 2 years. And right after they win the Ryder Cup, he cans Scotty, who's with Mito Pereira right now, so he's doing okay, and hires Ted Scott, Bubba Watson.
One more
No.
question before we go to break.
Yeah.
Now, I also know we're going to come back and talk more golf, but I know you and your dad are big skiers, and so are a lot of our listeners. So if you want to throw a bone to your two or three favorite ski areas, let everybody know where they might see you on the slopes this season.
Yeah. All right. So a little hometown love for Wachusett Mountain, small mountain out in Massachusetts that's close by. That's probably where I'll get on the slopes most because it's just so close to home. Love Killington and love Sugarloaf. So if I can make it to those, that'd be pretty sweet.
And I'll be sending you and out invitations to come to my beloved Whiteface, my new favorite Magic Mountain, and I'll give you your choice for a final examination of the expert skier. We can either go to Cannon or we could go to Jay.
Sounds good.
I'd pick either one of those. I'm Jay Flemma. You're listening to Jay Flemma Sports Report on iHeartRadio. We are with the Golf News Net, and we'll be right back after this. All right, Ryan, that's the end of segment one. Good job.
Okay.
Nice. That was excellent. That was really solid. Sorry to catch you a little off
Oh,
guard with
that's all
some
right.
tough
You know the
questions,
legalese
but
of it, and I hate when somebody gives the I'm not a politician answer, but I just don't know the ins and outs of all the legal stuff, you know?
well,
So.
good, because one of the questions that I didn't ask you that I was gonna is be like, do you feel any of this is unfair competition? But I held that one back. So
Okay.
all right, I'm gonna bring us back with all this chess stuff real quick.
Okay.
Okay,
I
and
did read
then,
your article too. Yeah, that's
oh,
good.
good. Okay. All right. So, Ryan, we're going to go back in to segment two, seven, six, five, four. All right, we're back. I am Jay Flemma, and you're listening to Jay Flemma Sports Report on iHeartRadio and the Golf News Net. We're talking with TJ Auclair, formerly of the Caddy Network and also PGA.com. But before we get to that, there's just a couple of sports updates and news updates I have to give you. From the mailbag, somebody asked, is there any update on your coverage of the Johnny Depp and Amber Heard trial? Sorry, everybody, there won't be for a while. Amber Heard has filed an appeal, but it takes 6 months to put together all of the documents, like the record on appeal and the brief. It's called perfecting it. I'm not certain how the time limits are in Virginia, but in New York, it's a 6 month period. Some states have nine, so we won't be getting to that much. Now, I assume a great many of you have also seen somewhere on your feed or somewhere in the news or even heard about it. That of all sports to be going absolutely kablooey, the last one you would imagine that would have a cheating scandal would be chess, but we're there. And when I say cheating scandal, we're talking Shakespearean in magnitude meets Watergate-ish depths here. It starts with the accuser, five-time reigning consecutive world champion, Magnus Carlsen. Widely regarded as the greatest player of all time. Not Bobby Fischer. This kid's better. Not Garry Kasparov. This kid beat Kasparov when he was a junior. No, 31 years old now. Magnus Carlsen's won five titles. But he's got it in for a young American upstart named Hans Niemann, who mathematics seems to prove is likely cheating. There's all sorts of crazy angles to this story as to how even Elon Musk decided to chime in, accusing him of using anal beads that vibrate to tell him what move to make. But for those of you that are interested, the golf link here is mathematics and probability. Just like in golf, how we can prove somebody is cheating because their handicap is too high and they're getting too many strokes. So, too, you can prove a chess player is cheating by matching how many of their moves match the moves made by the greatest chess supercomputers of this age. And mind you, they're all way better than any human. It was 1996 when the first computer beat a human. It was called Deep Blue and it beat Garry Kasparov. And since then, they've just been learning exponentially faster than humans are. We don't have a chance. One's called Stockfish, one's called Komodo. There's some other ones with names, but anyway. Short story long, I find this fascinating. So, TJ, real quick, tell me, have you ever had to deal with sandbagging in your life?
Well, at first, I just want to tell you that this is exactly why I'm an honorable player of the game of checkers, because I don't have to deal with any of this stuff, right? You keep the chess. But yes, sandbaggers for sure. I have dealt with before. It sucks, right? I mean, you go out there, you're trying to enjoy yourself, have a little competition, whatever, and you find out you stepped in it after a few holes with somebody who's just dishonest about what their handicap is.
I remember once when I was a younger, in the 90s, a guy named, well, I'm not going to name any names. Let's just call him Fred. he invites me to play golf with his two buddies. And they tell me, okay, one's a 12, one's an 18, one's a 24. I happen to be an 18. So we're going to play $5 Nassaws. I give six strokes to one guy. I play one guy straight up, and I give the other guy six shots, who's a 24 handicap. I've lost all three matches by like the 13th or 14th hole. But on the 16th hole, I look at the 24 handicap and I say, press. You tell me what he shot on the last three holes.
Well, I'm going to assume probably not great because you're playing for some serious, or you're still playing the same handicap, right? You haven't changed anything.
He's the 24 handicap.
Okay,
Okay.
okay.
Okay. You tell me what the 24 handicap shot on the last three tough holes of the golf course.
Well, I want to say bad, but the way you're talking, I'm thinking he probably parred all three of them.
That's
What
exactly what he did.
happened?
Okay. I later calculated those odds years later. I calculated those odds somewhere in the tens of thousands. But that's the beautiful thing is that Dean Canute, a name you probably recognize, came up with golf's probability charts. It's very easy. A golfer plays to his handicap only one time in five. Why? Because roughly the numbers work out that you only get 85% of what you would otherwise shoot. So there's no way you're going to shoot that every single time, unless you're getting better every single day, which no, that doesn't happen. Or you're remarkably becoming the goat at a speed never seen before. No. Or something else is going on. So that's what I think they're using here in chess, is they're figuring out that this kid matches the computer so often as to be a statistical outlier. Okay.
Right.
In his entire life, Bobby Fischer never played a single professional game where every single one of his moves matched what the computer said was the best move. In his entire career, Magnus Carlsen's only done that twice, but this guy's done it 10 times. So YDTM, you do the math.
Yeah. No, you're
Now,
right.
what do you think should happen? Or what do you think is the best way for ha tournament directors to handle handicap cheats?
You know, I mean, you and I, we've played together. We're hackers, right? So I mean, my bets with my buddies are not exactly that high stakes. So I mean, I don't know. I guess if you're playing with the buddies, there's got to be some kind of good punishment that you're going to give them. Maybe feed them a few too many drinks or what, I don't know. But in terms of that level, I mean, if you want to compare it to golf, we've had guys that have been suspended for an entire season for the way that they marked the ball on a green that happened on the European tour. You know, there are stories about how Vijay Singh may or may not have made it out of Fiji, based on things that he may or may not have done there.
Not to mention the deer antler spray.
That's right. Yeah. Which he thought was totally innocent when he gave that story to SI, right? And turns out it was not.
But then it turns out that he got away with it because remember, it got taken off the banned list. For those of
It
you
did.
that are for those of you listeners that are wondering, okay, I don't know what benefits it could possibly have, but essence of deer antler or tincture, sorry, alcoholic tincture of deer antler somehow makes you play better golf.
Yeah, I gotta find some of that stuff, Jay.
Can you explain how? I mean, that is,
I mean, is this you've got to tell me because my only experience with chess is the Queen's Gambit, which was excellent. But it is there any kind of precedent for this? Has there ever been a cheating scandal before at that level?
oh, yes, there have been a couple of very, very, very good ones. The one that comes to mind the most is one called Sebastian Feller, who they caught having a couple of games at 100%. And so it was in one tournament and they got rid of him. Another famous one is that there was a camera in a bathroom and a player was playing in a championship and he went in and he pulled the phone out and he got caught on camera. But my absolute favorite of all is a young Tigran Petrosian playing an even younger Wesley So and defeating him. And Wesley So comes on Twitter and says, "I really like your chess engine." And Tigran Petrosian responds, "What a crybaby. I was winning world championships while you were making pee-pee in your Pampers." Right. It came out ultimately that he actually cheated. But nevertheless, he still gave us the greatest comeback of any chess player in history. Bar none.
Yeah, and I mean, that stuff, it's pretty fascinating too, because when you talk about it in chess, it almost seems like these people have created their own language to get that message across, right? It's not something that's as blatant as what we can see in golf with high-def cameras or whatever, when a guy's marking the ball or, you know, messing around in the rough behind the ball before he hits the shot. I mean, in chess, if these reports are true, like from Elon Musk, of no less, then that's quite the language they've created to be able to tell this kid how to make these moves.
It really has become almost supersonic, and it's something similar in poker too. Remember the fellow that had the hat with the brim around his hat that would buzz and tell him whether or not to hit or to stay, but he needed an accomplice. You know, what they were talking about, and this is fascinating too, a fellow got on YouTube and he said, "Well, you know, I don't know about anal beads, but I have made a supercomputer the size of a film canister." Okay, the greatest chess computer on earth can fit in a film canister. You know, and then there was another incident, by the way, I forgot to mention the Topalov incident, where he had a similar situation set up in his shoe, that the sole of his shoe, talk about genius, and the location of where it would vibrate would be what piece, and the number of vibrations would be what rank and what file to place the piece. Yeah. So, you know, we're talking incredible supersonic stuff here. We're even going to get to the point very soon where people might have AI chips implanted. And, you know, it's
and
very
I mean,
scary.
Obviously, so much genius there. You wish they'd put it to good use. I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah, the battle is always going to be forever between the cheats and the guys who are trying to catch the cheats. Mm-hmm. And while we may be a step behind what they're doing, objects in your rearview mirror are closer than you appear. And, you know, I hearken back to some of the guys. And I, you know, as a lawyer now, I catch guys that cheat too. You know, my days of saving the world from bad music publishing deals may be gone, but, you know, I do save the world for ordinary people from time to time. You know, but I still keep Jeff Nowitzki as a role model for the work that he did bringing down both Barry Bonds and Lance Armstrong. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget it, TJ. Reading the line in that book, The Secret Race, where Armstrong, normally so sarcastic, normally so dismissive and condescending, normally so confident, says, "Why is Jeff Nowitzki looking into something that has to do with cycling?" That alone right there shows you the mettle of the man. Well, anyway, tell us a little bit more about what you're going to be up to for the rest of the year and in the coming year, and where can we read your stuff?
Sure, Jay. Yeah, I mean, I'm just helping out as much as I can right now at the Caddy Network. You know, this is sort of a quiet time of year for us, just really until January when things truly kick up on the PGA Tour and the best players are playing. So pretty much just getting some nice quality time with family right now, coaching youth sports. I will write the occasional piece on Caddy Network, but other than that, very quiet for now. And then, you know, hoping that in 2023 to start, we have far more answers than questions about this whole situation we have in golf right now in the split. It's been fun to follow, but it's been exhausting, as you know. I mean, I can't ever remember a time in my career, which now spans nearly 25 years, where there has been so much of a cycle of news in golf that just won't die, especially this time of year. I mean, usually this time of year, it's Ryder Cup or bust. Everything else is just, you know, off the table. But this has been something.
If things are happening at the speed of the internet, that's true. But, you know, I live for that sort of energy. You know, that's exactly what I like as a lawyer. You know, I like the law changing every day around me. I like to be at the formative edge. It's wonderful to watch. It's wonderful to think about it, and it's wonderful even once in a while to get asked what you think, because you know what? If you come up with a good idea, you never know, it might get implemented. Everybody, TJ O'Claire, a great friend of golf and a great friend of the Jay Flem Sports Report show. And TJ, we'll have you on again real soon to tell us all about what's happening. In the meantime, everybody, we're going to go to break, and we will catch up with you with our next guest right after this.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.